Fan on Demand.
Good evening, I'm John Molinaro, and you're listening to Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet World. Tonight, not much going on in Toronto FC land. No, actually there is. Jermaine Defoe set to be unveiled by the club. Dwayne DiRosario officially presented by the Reds on Thursday. And shocker of all shockers, Michael Bradley set to join. Here to talk about it with James Sharman and I later this evening will be Neil Davidson from the Canadian Press. Also, excited to talk about with Stephen Sander, former TFC beat reporter for the Toronto Sun, about a new electronic magazine that he's launching and what kind of effect that will have on soccer journalism in this country. Plus the usual banter from Mr. Sharman and myself over the next 60 minutes. So thanks for joining us. James, how are you?
I'm doing great. Great. I was at TFC today for the press conference, the D-Row unveiling. And got to tell you, J-Mo, you know, I've been to how many presses at BMO Field over the years?
Oh,
a lot.
Me too.
And even prior to BMO Field. And I can't remember the excitement, honestly. Maybe day one. There is a lot of excitement, I think partly because of what we've had to endure
right
over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. But boy, there's a buzz about this city once again with this club. And you got to give the ownership credit.
Yeah, well, there's hope and there's buzz and there's excitement. And that's all fine and good, but now they have to produce. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
there's absolutely
no reason now that they shouldn't be making the playoffs and contending for the MLS Cup this season.
I'm with you.
I'm sorry.
I think on paper,
right?
On paper, there's no reason why they can't contend.
Yeah.
At this point, it's the MLS. You can turn a very bad team around very, very quickly in MLS, and on paper, that's happened. But as people keep reminding me on Twitter over and over again, remember the Blue Jays?
Right.
Right? This time, round about this time last year, the buzz began, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. World Series champions. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, because I think, and we come across this in soccer, you know, whenever Real Madrid or Barcelona buys players, that the common sort of argument is that it's great that you're going to bring all these guys together, buy all these players, but you have to make them play together as a team, and you have to have the right coach to get them to play as a team and rotate through the squad. I wonder if Ryan Nelson... And I know I'm going to get criticized because I'm harping on him all the time. I do wonder if a sophomore coach with his limited experiences is up to that task.
I know. You've been, I won't say on his case, but certainly you've been critical of Ryan Nelson.
I think that's fair.
From day one. And he, I think he'll admit himself, he's got to prove a lot still.
Yep.
I will say this about his teams in the first year. As bad as they were and the results were awful, and yet we knew they conceded so many late goals. If you look at the score lines in those games, there weren't many blowouts. Defensively, they were improved from years prior. Obviously, not great, and you can't rely on this team late in games. We know that, but you know they weren't losing 3-0, 4-0, you know, 3-1. They're losing 1-0, 2-1, or it's 1-1 or a 0-0, right? So from that standpoint, I think in his first year, he showed that he can organize a team.
They were definitely better organized, and they were absolutely, you know, better from a defensive standpoint, but I still wonder if they need help there. I mean, Caldwell, God love him. But I think it's still asking him a bit much to babysit the likes of Daniil Henry, Gallag, Bissamonde. So I'd feel a whole lot more comfortable if they brought in another center back. I'm not convinced by Michael Bloom either on the right side. I know he looked strong down the stretch the end of last season, but it was a very short, very minimal sample of games we're talking about. So I wonder if they need to go out and bring in another right back.
Oh, I'm sure they're not finished yet. And who knows what their cap situation is like right now. I have no idea. And we'll find out maybe more on Monday.
Right.
If and when Defoe and Bradley are unveiled. Yeah. Obviously two DPs, but you have Laba sitting there. So from a cap standpoint, it's kind of confusing right now.
Right.
But they cleared, as Ryan Nelson said today at the press conference, they have cleared off a lot of space.
Sure.
Have a lot of allocation money as well.
And what about Laba? I mean, you know, now with...
Well, they can't keep him, obviously,
they have to... I mean, they either have to trade him or loan him out or they have
renegotiate.
So I suspect that he's on his way out of Toronto, which is... That's a shame because as a young player, I was quite impressed with him.
He was very good. It was a great signing, let's be honest. But, you know, he ain't going to supplant Michael Bradley, is he?
No. I wouldn't think so.
Now, a Alaba-Bradley partnership would be rather nice.
Well, that'd be great, but how do you accommodate the likes of Diro and Osorio and Alvaro Rey?
Well, precisely, yeah. I wonder, though, I mean, listen, MLS obviously helped out TFC to a certain extent, I would think, with the Bradley signing.
Sure.
You know, I'm not saying that MLS owed TFC, but I'm going to say MLS
they owed them.
Owed TFC. Yeah. Simple as that, right? And we know how MLS with other clubs, you know, over the years have, you know, helped out here and there.
Right.
A little phone call here, phone call there, you know, a pat on the back here, you know, clandestine meetings and backpatting and stuff. I wonder if they'll do the same with Laba. Is that possible with a renegotiation? Yeah, he's not a DP. Because DP is pretty murky in this league, let's be honest.
Oh, it's certainly possible, but I suspect that they're going to get him off the books if they're going to trade him. So we'll see. As I mentioned at the top, interesting times for Toronto FC with all these moves. Here to talk about it with us is Neil Davidson, esteemed soccer reporter for the Canadian Press. And I would say probably one of the better soccer journalists in this country. Neil, good evening.
Good evening, John, James. Nice to talk with you.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. So, boy, what do you make of all this? You've covered the team for as long as I have. We're there right from the start. This is a major sort of season overhaul. Give us a sense of, you know, where do you think this sort of ranks in the history of MLS with regards to team rebuilding projects?
Well, these are heady times. I was at the press conference today, and as James said, I was hard-pressed to remember when the press conference room at BMO Field had been as packed as it was today. And this was for an arrival of a player who we had known for some days that he was coming, so it wasn't breaking news that Di Rosario was back. Frankly, I was surprised. Weeks ago when the Defoe name first came up, and I was blown away when Bradley's name came up in the last few days. As far as twin signings go, I think it's about as big a punch as you can get for Major League Soccer, and I think it speaks volumes about, one, how much MLSE is willing to spend to try and turn what has been the league doormat for 7 years into a contender, surprisingly, the big names who are willing to come here. Admittedly, there's buckets of cash being thrown at them. So, I think it's a groundbreaking week. AS Roma just put out a release on their website confirming that Bradley has been sold to Major League Soccer for $10 million, so the wheels are turning.
I wonder if getting lost in all the, you know, hoopla and the hype about people like Bradley and Defoe and Di Rosario are the other sort of instrumental signings that they made, like Jackson, the Brazilian midfielder that they got from FC Dallas, and Justin Morrow as well. I mean, it seems like they're obviously, you know, Tim Leiwicki and Ryan Nelson and Bezbachenko are going after those big names, which is great. But I like how they've kind of rounded them out with MLS experienced sides or players, getting players who can complement, you know, those big stars and who can fill specific roles. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and I think I agree with you. And I think Gilberto has almost been lost in the discussion of what's going on right now. One club official said to me that wouldn't be surprised if Gilberto scored more goals than Jermaine Defoe for TFC next season. Morrow, they're very excited about. He's a versatile guy who can play left back and center back. Jackson, I don't know that much about him, I have to say, not having seen him too much in person, but obviously he's going to help add some creativity in midfield and also help make Gilberto more welcome. So I think they've done some good business, especially getting some draft picks for getting something for nothing in terms of Stefan Fry and Bobby Convey leaving. So I have to give the front office credit, though, like you, I would like to see maybe another defender or right fullback.
What do you get, Neil, with the inkling with the fans here? I know Ryan Nelson alludes to the fact that in the past you didn't trust people in charge, and for obvious reasons. And this is the, you know, this is the new modern TFC, new group, new players, new management. What will it take for the fans to actually begin trusting this management team? Or with these signings, do you think they have at that point past that?
Well, it was interesting when, James, when, as you know, Toronto FC sent out its season ticket renewals this week, delayed because of the poor performance, and the club had said they wanted to show the fans that they were going to do something. When I got my renewal notice this week, I wrote a story about it, and on Twitter I got feedback from some fans saying, where are the big-name signings? I'm not seeing them. Well, we're now seeing them. So I think they've lived up to their promises so far. Well, we'll find out for sure on Monday. But obviously the proof of the pudding is going to be on the field, and it's a franchise that has made so many promises, as you both know, in the past that have been unkept, that it's going to be even harder to win fans back. But I think they've made some real strides in that hopefully will win back a somewhat battered fan base. I mean, it's shocking to see that when you look at the numbers and see that Toronto ranked 10th in league attendance this season. You know, they've lost so much. They've squandered so much mm-hmm. of the goodwill.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure they're not done yet as far as, you know, changing the face of this team. As Jamie mentioned before, there are still potentially a hole or two at the back. Michael Bradley, now, you know, he's not a big sexy name like a Jermaine Defoe or a Thierry Henry. But if you look at Clint Dempsey arriving last year, how important that was to the league, getting an American back here, a guy that, let's be honest, Dempsey's not quite in his prime, but he's certainly still a very good player. You get Michael Bradley, he's 26 years old. He was an important member of Roma last year. He could have gone to any number of big clubs in Europe this offseason. He chose TFC for whatever reason, probably money, of course, it's probably money. But regardless, to me, this might be the most important transfer for MLS in its history, given that what it signifies and optically how it looks.
I've got to agree with you. The fact that they're getting a 26-year-old playing in one of Europe's great leagues, how great it is, we just have to ask John, he'll tell us. But he's come over. He's a man who played every minute for the 2010 World Cup for the United States. He is an ultimate professional. He left home at, 13 to join the U.S. residency camp, joined MLS at 16, went to Europe when he was 18. He has packed a lot into his life and played soccer at the highest level. The fact that he wants to come back to Major League Soccer and Toronto, yes, I think it speaks about money. It also speaks about he will get playing time here, which he perhaps wasn't getting at Roma. I think it's a huge statement for both TFC and adds luster to Major League Soccer. I think he's the kind of player that, as you say, he's not sexy, but he does so many things for the club, and I think he'll be a real leader for the club. It really was a mind-bending news that Toronto FC might get a player like that.
Talking to Neil Davidson of the Canadian Press here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet World. Neil, Dwayne DeRosario is an interesting one, obviously coming back after 3-year absence. We all know what happened last time he was here and the circumstances that led to his exit. Is this, do you get a sense from talking to him today and from TFC officials that's all in the past, that he can sort of focus on the task at hand, and that he'll be able to fit into a system under Ryan Nelson, a 4-4-2 system that's, you know, stresses defensive organization, which I would suggest is not his forte?
Well, he impressed me today, John, at the press conference. You know, he was asked about the money, and we don't know what he's making, but it'll be less, I think we can all agree, than the $650,000 he made last year with DC United. And he said, you know, he's here to win. It's not about the money. And when you think about what that says, for a long time it was all about the money for Dwayne DeRosario. We all remember the check signing goal celebration. Mm-hmm. So I think he has changed. It used to be all about the DeRosario brand with him. This is a player who, because of circumstances in his passport, never was able to make it overseas. He has won everything there is to win in MLS, and he's now willing to take less money He's bought into the vision of the management at TFC, though he made a point of noting that there was nobody left from the management when he last played for the team. I think he does realize he's going to have to take a different role, though he was quick to say that he's still committed, passionate, wants to play, wants to score goals, wants to win. I think he has changed from what I've seen with him at the national team. He has become more of a mentor. And at the risk of being a cheerleader for Toronto FC, I think this is another big signing for them. He's not as sexy as an English Premier League player or Serie A, but it speaks volumes that somebody wants to come back to a franchise that for so many years people have been trying to get out of.
I mentioned it before, you know, it's great that they've signed all these marquee players, players who can, you know, of genuine quality, who can obviously, when they get on the pitch, make a difference. But it's another thing to mold them into a team that can play together and gel. Ryan Nelson, a sophomore coach, not a terrible amount of experience. Is he, how confident are you that he can bring these diverse players, diverse group of players together and mold them into a winning team?
Well, certainly it's going to be more of a test when you have big stars on big contracts. You have to deal with them. You know, we've all seen the NBA, which seems to be a league, some in many cases where the players, the inmates run the asylum. But I have a lot of time for Ryan Nelson. I think he does a lot of things that the fans don't see. His contacts, for instance, I think his Rolodex is amazing. One of the reasons we got Gilberto was that he is Ryan Nelson is on very good terms with a major agent who deals a lot with Brazil. And from my understanding, is one of the reasons that Toronto FC got Gilberto was that nobody wanted to get on the wrong side of this agent who was helping strike the deal. So. And not just that, but obviously Defoe, and we don't know how the Bradley deal came about, but I think Ryan Nelson brings a lot to the table that you don't see just on the sidelines. In terms of tactics and things like that, I think he's very well prepared. It's going to be difficult to meld all of these people into one, but I think soccer is a sport where if you have some good strikers, suddenly the service to them looks a whole lot better because they can do things that bad strikers can't do. So if they can keep a tight defense and keep these big-name strikers on the field, and with somebody like Bradley marshalling the midfield, I think that there are some tremendous pieces from which they can do some damage. But Nelson, for his part, says, yes, they're better, but are they finished product? Nowhere near close. So he says improvement is going to be the mantra for this team. So I'm willing to give Nelson time. I've been impressed with him, and I think they've delivered the goods in the off season so far.
Neil, I read your recent column this afternoon, and it's funny you mentioned about the stadium, BMO Field, and MLS's plans for that. Now, we love BMO Field. It's cute. It's quaint, you know. It's Toronto's first major real soccer stadium. But we know it's, you know, bolts, a bit of tin, bit of glue, some string maybe, stuck together. It's not, you know, the finished product. What is MLS's ambitions for that stadium?
Well, they have had plans, James, on the table for quite a long time. It was one of the first things that it seems that Tim Leiwicki looked to was improving the home of Toronto FC. It, as you said, it's a bare bones stadium. It's a miracle it ever got built, considering nobody really wanted to put money into it, and it was downsized from the get-go. Toronto FC, I think they see that there's possibility that get the right product in there, you can sell more tickets, and I think that Tim Leiwicki, with his background from the AEG Group, which was a big music promoter in the United States, I think he sees a lot of potential to bring music festivals and things like that. It's not like they're devoid of venues with the ACC, but outdoors. They can do a whole lot more. They've talked about the Winter Classic and things like that. But I think the bottom line is that part of the reason we're getting these new players is they realize that it's now time to raise the bar. And part of that raising the bar is a new facility, because if you've gone to any of the other parks in MLS, as I know you guys have, be it Seattle or Sporting Kansas City's new home, Toronto FC, just BMO Field just is well behind. And if they want to keep up, they have to upgrade.
Neil, we got to let you go, but thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And I guess I'll see you on Monday.
My pleasure.
Thanks,
Neil Davidson from the Canadian Press.
Neil, by the way, will also be on Soccer Central on Sportsnet World. We're hoping Monday, maybe Tuesday. Depends how busy Monday is. You know, Ballon d'Or, potential TFC press conference. It could be a bit busy, but we'll get him on very, very soon.
Wanted to talk to you because and we got about a minute left, but you did a one-on-one with Dwayne Rosario today. What? How did that go?
Really good. You know, I say it's about Dero. You know, he's smart. Dero's smart, and I agree with Neil. I think that the Miro days are behind him. And he is here, I think, for the right reasons. He wants to win. But that being said, he's also smart, and this is also about Dero's legacy in his hometown.
Oh, absolutely.
In his hometown. You know, he's a smart guy. Brand Dero will be in force in Toronto over the next year or so, however long his contract's for. And absolutely good for him, you know.
Yep.
But I think he's here to win, but let's not kid ourselves. He's also here, you know, because this is where he lives, where he wants to live, and it's where Brand Dero will have the best chance of succeeding.
Absolutely. And I just hope that he can kind of keep things in check ego-wise and everything.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
Good stuff. We got to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk to Steven Sandor, former TFC beat reporter, about the new online magazine soccer publication that he is trying to get off the ground. You're listening to Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and watching on Sportsnet World.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet World. I'm John Molinaro. He's James Sharman. You know what we haven't talked about?
What?
The World Cup draw.
I've been away, haven't I?
You've been away.
Yeah.
You've been slacking off.
Yeah, I've been very lazy.
So we're mortal enemies now, basically.
We are. Well, you know what, though? I think you might hate me more than they hate you in this case, because I'm well aware that Italy will beat England.
But
whereas you think we stand a chance.
But wait, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about real quickly before we get to Steven Sandor. I get that there's every 4 years in the English press that there's this hysteria, and they're already planning the parade route for the World Cup, and it's just a matter of time before England wins the World Cup, and it's their birthright. So I get that. But don't you think now that it's too much the other way that, you know, basically, they're conceding. They're conceding. Yeah. England is not even getting out of the group before a ball is even kicked.
I know. They're so overrated, they're underrated, you know, to a certain point. You know what? Put it this way, JMO. There may be a key striker for England in the World Cup playing in MLS.
I jest.
But you know what? England's a good team. They are a good team. I admit that. But they're not a great team. And to progress deep in World Cups, you need to be a great team, generally speaking. It's a tough group. I think England could get out of the group. I would put money right now on Uruguay and Italy.
I would too.
Italy for sure. But, you know, people are just have this love affair at Uruguay because of Suarez and Cavani, right? Well, you know, they have issues too. They're not the full package either. So England have a chance to progress at the expense of Uruguay. But, you know, right now, as it stands right now, I would say it's going to be Italy and Uruguay advancing.
And that's fair enough. But it's doable is my point.
Sure it is.
I just find this overreaction for England they're not going to make it.
It's a self-protective mechanism, right? We've been brokenhearted so many times past. And now it's like, if we say that, well, there's no chance. Deep down, we're going to be crushed when they bow out the tournament. We are. But deep down... but on the surface, at least, we'll try and put this bravado. Oh, well, we don't care. They're going to lose anyway.
No, fair enough. I just
We're a self-hating nation.
Right. Well, very much so. I'm glad you said it and I didn't. As I said at the top, very excited to talk to Stephen Sandor, Edmonton-based writer and reporter who used to be based in Toronto and covered Toronto FC for the Toronto Sun. He's launching Plastic Pitch, which is he's touting as a thought-provoking Canadian soccer electronic magazine. Steve used to be the editor of the 11.ca, so this is a different project entirely for him, and we're pleased to welcome him on the show. Steve, how are you?
Doing fine, thanks.
Good. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's great to be on.
Don't you wish you were here in Toronto now with all this stuff going on with TFC?
I guess so, but I think it's almost a little bit, I think everything needs to be taken with a grain of salt. I mean, it's great, and I mean, seeing that when I was around that for 5 years, right. To actually have fans have a glimmer of hope, I think, you know, it's long and well-deserved for the fans in Toronto, and it's nice to see someone actually giving the fans steak and not just sizzle. So right. In that way, I'm excited. I still think they're a couple pieces away from
Kansas
City, Real Salt Lake level. I don't think you're planning a parade yet.
No.
But I think these are steps at least that Toronto is at least trying to be an international player now too and get the name out there, you know, to get its name to the headlines in Italian newspapers and European newspapers to say, hey, they're bidding on players who are in their, at least in Michael Bradley's case, you know, in their 20s and guys who are stars for their World Cup sides. You know, Jermaine Defoe, I'm a little bit iffy on, just because he's a player who's always been really streaky in his career, mm-hmm. a guy who can go months without scoring goals. I mean, that was at the Premiership level, and this is the MLS level, and it takes such a long time to adjust to MLS and playing game after game, flying through time zones, playing 1 week at altitude, playing another week at 35 Celsius heat. It takes a few months for a European guy to come over and fully grasp that. So don't expect things to happen right away. It won't be till the second half of the season till I think that you start seeing TFC put it together.
Hey, Stephen, just one thing. You're an Arsenal fan, aren't you?
Well, I'm an Arsenal supporter.
So will that perhaps, you know, maybe cloud your vision of Jermaine Defoe maybe a little bit?
Well, I was thinking it would be awfully nice if TFC for a kit change this year would throw the white sleeves on that and put Jermaine on. it would be awfully nice. But no, it doesn't really cloud my perception. I think it's the reality. This is a player that's always sort of never really won a manager's confidence at Tottenham that he had of the many they've had in his tenure. And I mean, he's outlived a lot of managers there, but he's never been the guy. They've always looked for someone else. And he's never won that confidence of being someone that, you know, people felt they could start him at the top of the 11 and feel that he's the guy you could go for a long run of games with. And I think his confidence has suffered because of that.
So, Steve, enough of TFC already. Let's talk about your project, Plastic Pitch, which you're touting as a Canadian soccer electronic magazine. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what was the motivation behind trying to raise public funding to get this off the ground?
Well, I think in the years of being out here at Edmonton and obviously doing the color work for FC Edmonton and doing the 11.ca, which had, you know, a strong readership, and we tried to do a lot of things to reach a Canadian audience and really trying to deal with a lot of the Canadian stories that maybe people didn't see a lot of, and maybe not necessarily always the Whitecaps, TFC, Montreal Impact stories, but, you know, the Canadian guys who are playing in China or a lot of the NASL stuff that's going on, lower division stuff, and as well as some of the Canadian guys playing in less fancied European leagues. We're talking, you know, Finland and the Israeli league, and, you know, we have Canadians playing in those places, and I think those are some interesting stories. But, you know, the web platform only gives you so much flexibility in terms of doing what you want to do. And I love the magazine format. I'm a magazine editor. That's what I do. And I really like what happens now with tablet magazines. And moving forward, I really wanted to take some of that material and some of that inspiration and use a talented core of people to put that into a tablet magazine format. Now, we're in the process of doing a Kickstarter campaign. We have about 3 weeks left. If you go to Kickstarter and check out Plastic Pitch, you'll see what we're all about. We have a video that's explaining a little bit about what we're doing. We're trying to get people to engage in what kind of stories they want to see. But, you know, when you look at the analytics of a website like ours and you see what people read, they aren't so big on the game reports because, you know, let's face it, we talk about these things instantaneously. We see them on television. We hear about them on the radio. What they're really interested in is the more in-depth kind of stories that we've done. And that's where we really want to go because we think that's where the readership is.
What's the fundraising goal that you set for yourself? When do you want to get this off the ground? And how is the fundraising campaign going so far?
Like to get the first issue for spring, so sort of for around like the first little bits of the NASL and MLS seasons, so that, you know, it's a time when the teams and or fans in the five markets, and I like to say five markets now because Ottawa's joined Edmonton and NASL and the three MLS markets, are really thinking about the league. And it's going to cost, you know, really to do three issues, like we costed this out, and it's about $10,000. I mean, obviously you have your writer fees and your photographer fees and other licensing things that you have to deal with, but as well, like, it's not free to put a magazine on an iTunes platform or right. on an Amazon platform. It actually costs thousands of dollars a year to keep that maintained. And while it's not nearly as much as, let's say, going to the print format and printing a magazine and shipping it out, there still is quite a cost to be realized. And really, you need to start showing potential advertisers and such that you need to have that fan base to start off. And so, you know, this is sort of the way to sort of prove it or lose it, I guess, in the sense that I have a readership that's dedicated with the 11, trying to spread that word and trying to build that and to see if they are acceptable to moving the format, to seeing if they want to do it that way. Yes, I probably will pick up the 11 again once this starts or whether it does not start, but it will be in a bit of a different format. It just does some of the things that did and didn't work. I had a chance to look at it, and it will be a much more streamlined website when it relaunches. But hopefully the plastic pitch stuff takes over a lot of the meaty content.
Yeah, Steve, it sounds familiar to the Blizzard in England and Europe, which is extremely successful and very, very popular. Was that an inspiration?
Yes, it is. You know, I just got the latest issue in the mail about right before Christmas. I think it was the last mail day before Christmas. It came in, and yeah, I really like what Jonathan Wilson's done. I mean, I love his work. You know, I think the Beyond the Curtain book, where he went to Eastern Europe, is one of my favorite soccer books in terms of what he does with journalism. And I think, you know, you combine bits of soccer journalism, some of the fiction that they run there, that sort of plays up the mythology, and I think as well, but I think on our side in Canada, because we are so focused on MLS, and which we should be, it is the Division I league, and we have three of our major cities in it, but I do think that some of the things slip by. I know one thing I joke about with people all the time when people say, well, who do you think is the most popular Canadian player, and I say, oh, it's Matt Lamb by a mile. Like, I mean, no one gets hits like him on the website because he plays in Asia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Asian fans go nuts for him. And, you know, he has Nike billboards in Hong Kong. The Canadian fan doesn't maybe know who he is. The guy jumps from the NASL to go play in Hong Kong. But this is a guy who, I swear to people, when I say over and over, this is actually the most popular Canadian player. He just took a sheer numbers.
That's amazing.
He's playing in the world right now is Matt Lamb. And those are the kind of stories that I think, you know, we can tell.
It's good stuff. Steve, we've got to let you go, but before we do, take a minute to plug the Plastic Pitch website, how people can contribute and can help you get this off the ground.
Well, it's a simple, go to Kickstarter.com. I think a lot of people are familiar with Kickstarter. And, you know, I'm really honest about what you get. You know, you got your digital issues, you'll reserve some copies, and I'm not the kind of person that throws a lot of, you know, I'm not going to be the kind of person that's going to promise something I can't deliver. So I definitely want to make sure that everyone understands that what you're contributing is not a donation. You'll be getting magazines for your time. This is a business transaction. So there's a chance to buy advertising or to simply just reserve copies of the magazine. Go to Kickstarter, search for Plastic Pitch. You know, the name's a bit cheeky. Yes, I know not a lot of people love the artificial turf, but I think it's our way. We're going to be playing a Women's World Cup on it. So I think it's have a little fun with the name and check it out. And as I said, we have some videos and some testimonials on it from players to have a look and support the project.
Good stuff, Steve. Looks and best of luck with it. I think it's a great idea, and yeah, anything we can do to help promote it, we'll surely will. And we miss you around here. Come back soon, okay?
Yeah, anytime now. I miss the banter in the press box.
Yeah, you're sorely missed. Good stuff.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks.
Cheers.
Yeah, that's fascinating, huh? Yeah. There are some great stories. And actually, we had Les Jones on here a few weeks back. He has a new book out, which I have actually right here. It's called Soccer, Canada's National Sport. Right here. It's a beautiful book, actually. Amazing pictures, great stories. And so it's by Les Jones. Look it up. Soccer, Canada's National Sport. If you're a fan of Canadian soccer, get it.
Well worth the investment.
And also get Plastic Pitch.
Yes. Contribute. The FA Cup.
Oh, yes. The FA Cup. What about the FA Cup, Jamie? So you upset me last week.
Why did I upset you?
Because you wrote a column, and I love your columns. They're always very well written, but I disagreed vehemently with this one.
Okay.
You know, where you just basically destroyed what is, to me, the most famous historical, traditional football tournament and the greatest knockout cup in professional sports. Sorry, in sports, because it's not just professional. Yeah. Amateur teams can have 700 teams. Right. Enter this tournament every year. And there you are just, you know, dissembling it and saying, let's change it. Let's modernize it. Upset me greatly.
Okay. So what did I say?
Well,
what did I write that was so offensive?
Well, you suggested improvements, right?
I did. Right? I mean, I should say for all the listeners, this was all done with a goal towards
upsetting me.
Well, that, and actually improving what I feel is a somewhat stagnant tournament that is really, lost some luster over
the
couple
years. But why is it stagnant, though? I mean, I agree. Maybe 10 years ago, for sure, it was Man U pulled out, I remember, in 2000.
I think that was the turning point.
Serious damage.
I think that was the turning point.
And there's no doubt that the big clubs, in the early rounds especially, still put more credence to the Premier League, the Champions League. You know,
right.
And a lot of teams do rest players. They rotate players for the FA Cup. I understand that. And when I grew up in the 80s, it was, on par with the first division.
Absolutely.
Was the Premier League back then.
Yep.
And that Saturday in May was, the entire country stopped. I remember watching on TV and they followed the buses through the towns, the players. It's just the romance of the cup. It was very much alive. I loved it and I still hold on to that. I understand what you're saying. But I think in recent years, it's kind of rebounded a bit. You know, Arsene Wenger and like are respecting it a bit more and playing their first teams a little bit more at the expense of the League Cup, perhaps. But overall, I think it's bounced back. It's not what it was. You're right, 100%. And maybe you can, tinker with it here and there. But overall, I think one of your suggestions was to eliminate the Premier League teams.
Yeah,
the hell would watch it? Where's the TV revenue coming from?
I think my point was that I think the tournament has become bogged down by teams, Premier League teams, who feel their B-sides. Aren't taking the competition seriously. And so the games aren't quite as good as what they once were. And I don't think it means as much to championship teams or the teams in the lower divisions, or even conference teams. So why not make it all about a tournament that for teams who really want to be there? Like when Wigan won the FA Cup last year, you could tell that was a big deal.
Meant a loss.
It meant a lot.
There's no doubt.
Man City lost. I'm sure they would have liked to have won, but were they really generally too bothered about it?
Well, last year, perhaps, given that they're out of contention in the Premier League. But I know what you're saying.
I think now, especially in the modern game, where avoiding relegation is so key and securing that top four spot is so key, that you're going to see more of this in terms of top Premier League clubs. Just
but it gives the small clubs a chance to beat the bigger clubs as well. You might see more. And what makes, to me, the FA Cup magical has been those incredible surprises, shockers, when you see that League One team or a conference team, an amateur team, God forbid, beating a league championship team or, potentially a Premier League team.
Mm-hmm.
Or you see, some tiny little club drawing Liverpool in the fourth round.
Right.
And Liverpool can go to their ground and take over a town for a day. Or they switch it and they say, we'll take the gate. And we'll let you play at Anfield. And you can actually sustain a club, a tiny club, for a long time through one match that way. I think the potential is so, so great. And I know it's bogged down, but if you have a tournament that doesn't include the best of the best, what is the point? FA Cup is a football association cup. All the teams under the football association.
And this is the Italian in me, because I grew up in a tradition where we don't really value domestic cups at all. So I understand. I come at this from a totally different perspective from you, but I look at the FA Cup and I say, what is the point? Like, what is the competitive point of this tournament? I understand the history. I understand the tradition. I understand the romance. I understand
being the best
all that.
In England. That's what it used to be anyway.
It used to, but it's not anymore.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not sure I understand it being, you know, the history of the tournament, the romance of the tournament, that's not enough for me to sustain it as it is. It's got to undergo some change to become relevant again, and I don't think it's relevant.
But if you take out the best teams in England, it loses all relevance, in my opinion.
Does it, though?
Yeah, I think so. Fair enough. Because, you know, it's all about the potential of the Cup, you know, and the small team, David against Goliath, giving David a chance to slay Goliath. Now, in recent years, last year, Wigan, I think Millwall made the Cup a few years ago.
Right.
But generally speaking, the big teams make it to the final anyway.
Exactly.
Right? I know that. But that's fine, you know. Quite frankly, and I've discussed this with many of our football cohorts over the years, you know, I do like to see that the Chelsea Man U in the final rather than the Wigan Man City. I want to see the big boys.
So now, you like the romance, but only to a certain extent.
Yeah, exactly. I like what the romance can potentially offer you. But when it comes down to it, the big, big stage, hey, listen, I love seeing Wigan beat Man City, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But, you know, it used to be, I mean, my best memories were seeing Liverpool play against Everton
right. In
the FA Cup final in the late 80s. You know, it was incredible.
What about replays? Because one of my suggestions was get rid of the replays.
I get that. You know, and
would be acceptable? You'd be okay with
that? Yeah, I would. I think there's so many games nowadays. It really bogs down the schedule for the big clubs especially. And we're at a point now where we may not like penalties, but it's part of the game. Simple as that. So that is one change I would accept. I would like them to play the semifinals at neutral grounds rather than Wembley. It used to always be the semifinals were at, you know,
Villa Park
or Hillsborough a lot, right. You know. And now they go to Wembley. It takes away a little bit of it.
The other suggestion, one of the two other suggestions I made was tying in sort of promotion. Like now this is under the guise of if you had no EPL teams, but for instance, if a championship team did win it, then give them a top six spot to get into the playoffs so that way they can earn promotion.
I like the idea of more reward for the champion. I like a Champions League berth.
Do you really?
Yeah. Oh. And I know people will tell me, oh, but what if a league championship team, what if Birmingham won it?
Well, what about
that? And then, which they've done, of course, and then the champions, so what? Good for them. They won it. And it will put a lot more credence to it. You see a lot of teams playing better teams, better squads in that. It means so much to them. And if a top four team happened to, you know, finish second in the league, qualify and win the FA Cup, that's fine. Then just drop down the Premier League. Four teams qualifying for the Premier League is too many anyway.
I'm not down with
the Champions League. Give me three in the FA Cup champion. Suddenly it's very relevant.
Yeah, I'm not down with the Champions League berth.
No.
I think you're
crazy. And why is that?
Crazy.
For what reason?
Because I think you have to earn a Champions League spot, and I think...
You're beating out 700 other teams in a country.
Well, but not really. I mean, you've won seven games, or eight. I forget what it is. But if you finish top four over 38 Premier League game season, that's earning it.
Fourth
seven
place,
games isn't earning
please,
it.
Please, fourth place.
What about the regional format? Because I suggested divide it into two, like north and south, so that way you get
easier
more...
for the fans. Yeah, you know, British fans complain about having to travel. It's a tiny country, right? We live in North America here. We travel, you know, yeah. North v. South. I mean, that could get nasty as well.
Well, but
I like that.
But
I mean, imagine
that
the final, North v. South, boy.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Wouldn't that add some spice to it? No?
Oh, there'd be spice.
Well, there you go.
There's no doubt. But there's also great rivalries, you know, within North. You know, you want to see potentially a Leeds Man U final, you know? It would be outstanding, wouldn't it?
Right.
I don't think the country's big enough to make it regional, really. I'm fine the way it is. I like just throw them all in the big pot, which is what they do, and pull them out. It's just the most, I don't know, that how a knockout tournament should be. It's raw, it's basic, it's real.
Well, fair enough. I'm not English, so what do I know?
How's a Coppa Italia today?
Oh, I didn't even know.
No,
I honestly don't follow. I don't follow.
Roma beat Samp.
Well, there you go.
Udi beat Inter Milan. Actually.
Inter Milan. That's right. I didn't know that.
Di Natale might be leaving, retiring.
He is going to retire at the end of the season. Big blow for people who don't follow Serie A football. We're running out of time, so we got to go. I want to thank Derek Brandeo, Igor Henriquez, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass for producing tonight's show. I want to thank Neil Davidson of the Canadian Press and Steven Sandor for joining us to talk all things TFC. I want to thank James Sharman.
Thank you,
James. For coming back after slacking off all those
weeks. I know. I'm extremely lazy.
James and I will be back next week for another edition of Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on Sportsnet World. Until then, cheers for listening.